Okay, I think we are ready to start. Good morning, everybody. Special welcome to two new faces, of which one is not truly a new face. We have a new chair of the Japanese ASBJ, Atsushi, very well known among us. And a truly new face is Chiara de Prete, who is their new, what's the official title in IFREC?
Chairwoman.
Chairwoman. Okay, very good. Chairwoman of IFREC. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we start our discussions with a presentation by the ANC on treatment of accounting treatment of ICOs of coins. What do you call them?
Initial coin offerings.
Initial coin offerings. Please. Patrick.
Thank you, Hans. So do you hear me all right? Yes? So this regulation has been taken at the end of 2018, in the context of the development of ICOs under French law, and in the context of, you know, discussions about, I don't know if the word exists in English, but we have it in French, tokenization of the economy. So I don't know if you use it as well, but we have some sort of Franco-English denomination. So in order to get to the regulation, since it is a highly innovative domain, we have organized a due process involving all stakeholders under the leadership of the French accounting standard setter, ANC, and that lasted almost a year. So we had a working group, and it followed our due process and was approved by our board in December 10th. It is in the context of a new law, which is called PACTE, which is underway in the French Parliament, and the vote of which will take place before the end of the first semester. At this stage, the regulation we have approved, we have adopted, does not address platforms because there were still legal discussions on how the platform should be organized and what would be the supervision. Therefore, this is left for a second stage. Due to the innovative nature of the topic, and I suspect everybody would agree with that, we have taken a principle-based approach for issuers and holders of tokens, and we have explained that we would assess on a regular basis the relevance of the regulation. The first assessment will take place during the summer, and we will bring in additions, or we will amend if necessary. So in fact, since we have left aside platforms at this stage, we have in fact two major sections in our regulation. The first one is the accounting treatment of tokens for issuers, and the other one is for holders. So as regards the accounting treatment of tokens for issuers, even if there is a legal definition of what a token is in the future law, we are very careful because a token can have in fact a number of natures. It's not straightforward. It depends very much on the commitments made by the issuer, and which is the basis for you know, giving the legal substance. The substance of the commitment is key and is creating the basis for the accounting. In fact, it's not a an accounting object, which is clear. Therefore, you need to go back to the white paper that organized the initial coin offering, and also to all other relevant documents which are issued by, which are produced by the issuer. In other words, the reasoning following a number of discussions with our, with the various stakeholders, auditors, Banque de France, AMF, our securities market regulators, auditors, preparers as well, we concluded that we had to have a good look at what was the commitment taken, made by the issuer in the various documents he's publishing. Mm. And not only do we suggest to start from that, but we also suggest to reflect in the notes to the financial statements, in a comprehensive note, exactly what is the commitment. In other words, should the white paper not be clear enough, we suggest to clarify in the notes. Because, and notes will, as a consequence, be a complement to the white paper or to the other documents. Our experience is that a number of ICOs have taken place on rather ambiguous terms. And therefore, if the white paper is not clear enough, if the other documentation is not clear enough, in the notes, people will have to be very clear on what is the purpose of the token, what are the commitments made, and what are the accounting consequences that are derived from the nature as declared by the issuer. So therefore, as you all understand, we are introducing a robust element of transparency based on the description of commitments. These commitments being different from one ICO to another in a very innovative environment. Following that, there is some sort of decision tree. And the first element of distinction between the tokens is between two categories. You have tokens having characteristics similar to known security or equity instruments, share, bonds, or other. In this case, the regulation is not expressing any view. It just refers to the relevant accounting treatment for similar financial instruments. This is also the path with the Securities and Exchange Commission is following. In other words, if it is a financial instrument, then the applicable market regulation will be taken into account by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Maybe I should say something here. Open a parenthesis. The law which is being discussed at the moment is introducing different sorts of two categories of issuers. The issuers which will require a visa from the stock exchange, and the ones that will not. In other words, it remains a rather open market. Some people may want to issue tokens without a visa, in which case subscribers will perfectly know that there will be no review of what they are doing. If there is a visa, it doesn't mean that it's an approval, but it is a review of the quality of the information which is being provided. So if the tokens have characteristics similar to known security or equity instruments, they follow that route. The other route is for all other tokens. And in this case, you have to subcategorize according to the commitment made. And you have then the decision tree continues. I'm moving to slide four. The subcategorization will, in fact, lead issuers to distinguish three categories of tokens. One, tokens have the characteristics of a debt, with the organization of the extinguishment of the debt according to the commitment made, in which case it should be treated as a liability. Now, many tokens are in fact subscribed and the issuers expect future services or future delivery of goods. In this case, it is considered by French regulation as a deferred turnover. So it's a liability, which is which is in the liability and then taken to P&L according to the delivery of services and goods. This includes utility tokens and payment or exchange tokens, which are issued by companies organizing ICOs. So it's a liability on insurance and a transfer to P&L according to delivery of services. In the notes, the rhythm followed in order to transfer to P&L will have to be disclosed, i.e. the delivery of services or the delivery of goods will have to be explained, and the pattern which will be used to transfer from liability to profit and loss as income will be explained in the notes. And the third category, of course, is that in a number of cases, it's impossible to establish a commitment. In other words, money is received, have no counterpart, but a profit. So in this case, some preparers were, of course, saying, well, as long as you don't know, you leave it as a liability. We said no. So we said if the commitment's made by the issuer are not clear, or either in the white paper or in the notes, or as the management commentary, if it's another possibility, but it should be in the notes anyway, and in the management commentary by cross reference, if the issuer wishes, which is referring to the future conversation we'll have on management commentary, then. If there is no commitment, what is it? If anything, it's a profit. So three categories. On slide five, how is the amount recorded? Is the price paid by subscribers? It is net of value-added tax or similar taxes, if any, which should be recorded independently. Here we have a principle. Quite frankly, it's not easy to apply because people do not really know if those transactions, even when there is an underlying delivery of services and goods in the future, is liable to VAT and how it will be liable to VAT. So that point will be clarified by the tax authorities, but in principle, of course, the income, the future income, is net of VAT, if any. And when the subscription is made via tokens instead of fiat money, then the conversion is made in euros at market value at the time of issuance. There is there may be cases where you have an hybrid nature, and in a number of cases which we have seen, there is an hybrid nature. It's part debt, and it's part future services. And you have some triggering factors, which are complex sometimes, to convert to debt or to convert to services. In this case, the issuer must explain in the note a rational allocation of the price he has received between the two categories, or the three categories. There are, in the white papers or in the documentation, there are many conditions and disclaimers that are made. What we have seen is a quote-unquote, almost a jungle with a number of different wordings. It's not standardized. It's going through, of course, law firms, but the wording is sometimes ambiguous on a product that is not very well known and not stabilized. So what we are here requesting is a clear disclosure on impact, on accounting treatment, on occurrence, i.e. if, for instance, a system is not developed. So you have a utility token. You promise that you're going to develop a system. You receive money for that. You have no commitment to succeed in developing the system and making it work. So you have to disclose there is a triggering event, which is, the system is not working. So what happens then? Then the pattern for delivering services doesn't work. So what is happening with the deferred income? So we suggest in this case that this be described very, very precisely in the notes, and the accounting treatment be described also for each and every triggering event, explained as a condition or in a disclaimer. We also addressed the question of tokens allocated to employees and other contributors to the activities of the issuer at privileged conditions. We suggest to record the discount by reference to the price paid by independent third parties or market value in case of absence of subscription. So if it is during the time of a subscription, this is taken as a reference. The liability is taken into account on that basis, and the discount is considered as a an expense. If there is no subscription at the same time, then it would be by reference to market. So these are the characteristics, the principles that we have established for the accounting treatment of tokens at the level of issuers. Now, as regards holders, on slide six, to a certain extent, it's quote unquote easier, but we had a long discussion about, is it an investment, or is it because we are buying the future services, the future goods? Here it is difficult to eliminate one of the two possibilities. So we suggest that holders decide and declare if they have acquired tokens for their own use or for investment. So it's the position of the management of the holders is key. And the accounting treatment will be different. tokens held for own use should be recorded as an intangible fixed asset and amortized over the useful life period of expected services. Of course, if we are not talking about services, but goods to be delivered, it's considered as a prepayment, and then it goes into inventory if it is for sale, or fixed assets if it's for own use. We hesitated a little bit here, but we said it has to mirror the treatment adopted by the issuer. For all the tokens which are linked to future services or the delivery of goods in the future. Now, if tokens are held as investment, then we have created, because as you know, we have a chart of accounts in France, we have created a specific investment category, so it's not cash. It's a specific line. The valuation is at fair value, but we defer gains and losses until realization, with, of course, a special treatment on potential losses. Potential losses are taken into account via a provision. So it's higher. It is, in fact, fair value, but with profit at realization and a provision for potential losses. Of course, many tokens have a volatile market value, to say the least, and some have unreliable market values because lack of liquidity, restricted market. Therefore, in this case, we request, because not all tokens are bitcoins. Bitcoins, there is a market. We see it's very volatile, but there is a market. On many other ones, there is a limited market. That's why the fair value will be, in fact, mentioned as a basis for valuation at asset level, but the realization, the gain will not be taken into account before realization, and of course, the conditions of determination of fair value is absolutely paramount and should be explained in the notes. So this is roughly what we have adopted. We decided to adopt it as a conclusion in spite of the fact that it was not stabilized, because we felt that it was dangerous for a developing market not to have an accounting treatment that people could refer to. Now, I do not know at this stage, maybe we will know a little later in the course of the year, if it's slowing down ICOs because people are obliged to explain what they do, or if, on the contrary, it's putting a reasonable level of transparency and it's creating a more healthy market. This going together with the Visa, if people issuing coins, tokens, are in fact going the route of the Visa of the stock exchange, plus an accounting treatment based on this regulation, at least there will be a level of transparency for the subscribers and a clarity on the financial statements produced. Now, we are prepared to take into account the evolutions and the lessons that we are going to learn from the market. We took the option, as you have understood, to go ahead and say that there was a rendezvous clause on a regular basis to take into account experience. This is it.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Interesting introduction. Chris? Can I just ask a question before we sort of move into discussion? So, Patrick, I just wanted to understand. So this is purely for your French companies that are not listed that would have to apply this standard? Or who exactly is going to have to?
No, it's for anybody. Say for all initial coin offerings or holding of tokens. There will be in the law a legal definition of what a token is, okay?
Yeah.
So if you are issuing a token, you will go under that law, and in which case you will have to apply. Maybe I was not clear enough. If you have a visa of the stock exchange, it doesn't mean that you are listed. It's a special duty that has been given to the Securities and Exchange Commission of France to deliver a visa on ICOs. But it doesn't mean that you are per se listed on a regulated market.
So an IFRS compliant company has to comply with this as well?
Yes.
Do you see that this is IFRS compliant?
I'm sorry?
Do you see that this treatment is actually IFRS compliant? Is that one of the considerations?
So
what you're proposing here, are you confident that that's actually IFRS compliant?
IFRS compliant?
Yeah.
So that's a question.
Could they follow this treatment and then still assert that they're compliant with IFRS's issued by the ISB?
Okay.
That's the question I have.
Okay. So in France, you have IFRS applied to consolidated accounts of of listed entities.
Yeah.
So in this case, you have for individual accounts of companies, they would have to apply that anyway.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
As an individual, as a legal entity.
Okay. Yeah.
At consolidated level, I don't know. It's up to the ISB to issue a reasoning behind the tokens.
But in the absence of IFRS,
you have to go back to probably. I turn to the ISB in this case. Maybe I'm wrong, but. What I perceive as a possible difference is the deferral of is some sort of OCI, if I may say so, for the holding of tokens, where you defer a profit in income in the P&L until the realization. Now, is it fundamentally in contradiction with IFRS? I don't think so, but it's for the ISB to say.
Well, I guess maybe just to... So on the coin offering side, so far our discussions have said that you look at the terms and conditions, work out what the substance is, and apply the requirements of normal IFRS standards. I think that sounds relatively... consistent with what you've got here from your ICO side. I think on the holder side, where we're at is that the Interpretation Committee has published a draft agenda decision, which would say from the holder perspective, you're either in the inventory standard or you're in 38, depending on whether it's inventory or not. And then if you went to 38, then obviously you'd apply the normal requirements there. So whether or not you had active markets, et cetera, will be relevant in terms of the fair value measurement. I think on the holder side, we've got a difference potentially, depending on where we get with the draft agenda decision, which is out for comment at the moment.
But just curiosity here, in the meantime, can it be called IFRS? In the meantime, before you issue the...
It depends.
Issue the standard.
Well, the agenda decision at the moment is saying that that's the reading of the current requirements in IFRS.
Which is the status is on the...
It's out for comment at the moment.
Out of the comment.
I think it would also depend on... I'm not quite sure exactly how your loss position works, because if you're in 38, if you had a previous revaluation, you'd have to offset the losses against the surpluses and only the balance would go through to P&L. But this sort of reads as though you'd take all of the losses through to the P&L.
No. It's a fluctuating system. If it's moving up, then you reduce the provision. If that's your question.
Yes. First of all, I think coin offering and tokens are very widespread economic activities and phenomena already in the market. And I'm happy the French take whatever actions in terms of accounting, while there are very limited number of countries who did something on those the tokens or what we have been saying, cryptocurrency. I think Japan and Korea are the only country who wrote something about this cryptocurrency and tokens. And I'm happy that, you know, ANC did something. And looking at those regulation and provisions, I think they are very much in primarily in line with IFRS. And if the reporting is made according to this regulation, I think the information will be, you know, very much reflecting the economic substances. But the question I have is very similar to what Chris said. I was really wondering what is the status or hierarchy of this regulation? How this regulation interfaces with IFRS? And the reason is because mostly the regulation is in line with IFRS, but one thing I was questioning was that tokens held as investment, and you said this will be, the valuation will be made at fair value, and this is a little bit contradictory with what IFRS says. If you just follow the wordings of IFRS, this tokens, regardless of whether it was held for investment, it should be treated as an intangible asset, and you cannot really value at a fair market. So this is a very special contradiction, and I was wondering how you can interface this regulation with IFRS. That's the fundamental question.
But is real investment or trading? What do you mean?
I don't know whether... As in, well, maybe the wording is unclear. It's for trading. It's for it's like shares that you want to a portfolio of shares of bonds that you have invested instead of having cash. So it's not for your use. Maybe the term investment is not properly translated then.
Linda? I think that's an important distinction.
Okay. Maybe that's because what we meant is that it's not for your own use. It's because you want to have a return of that. You are speculating on it.
Okay.
I think if you look at the market, there are many, many people who really hold tokens for real investment and, like, speculation. Yes. So I think how to... account for those speculation is a critical issue.
But that is what is described here as owned for investment might be an improper translation. It means it's for
trading,
for speculation, for the speculation, potential gain.
But then why wouldn't you put that through your profit and loss account? Why would you defer it?
Under French accounting law, we do that for a number of things. We defer until realization, for instance, on currencies. We have this treatment, so we follow the same one, which is inspired by the principle of prudence. So you take a provision if you have a potential loss and you defer the profit until realization, which in this case was felt to be prudent and reasonable due to the high volatility of the tokens.
Tax authorities are not like it, but
No. No, tax authorities recognize it for currencies as well. Right. By the way, I forgot to mention the accounting treatment is inspiring the tax treatment as well. So there will be, we do not expect, there might be differences, but we do not expect major differences. So maybe, the clarification on the term investment, maybe my mistake in terms of translation. What I meant was for, in order to have a capital gain.
Linda? Okay, so I would say that this is one of the topics that is pretty active in Canada, not just from a standard-setting perspective, but really the developments are in the regulatory space and the audit space. So our securities regulators have been busy issuing documents, and the first document was issued in June of 2018, which basically took a look at what was happening with coin or token offerings in Canada. And the document actually is interesting because it looks at the indicator of what they observed in terms of the disclosures and the offerings. And they have a table that lists I think it's 14 different things that they observed. And basically the document says, look at the weight of evidence around what you observe about these underlying documents to conclude, and basically said that in their opinion, most of these offerings involve securities. So they are analogizing them to securities offerings. And therefore, they then said that the accounting would then follow, you know, that vein. So it would be securities investment. It would be like the notion of holding something for trading. Okay, so I think there's a parallel there. They have actually just issued in March of this year, March 14th, jointly with the regulator over investment. It's the Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada, or IROC, a discussion paper for comment looking at whether or not we actually have now any trading platforms in Canada. So the current view of the securities regulators is that there's not enough activity for anybody to qualify as an exchange or a trading platform. But they're now asking for comments around what would we define as a trading platform, jointly with the investment industry. And so that's active right now. And that consultation paper is seeking input, including what do you do in terms of custody and verification, price determination, market surveillance, all of the things that you would expect to see, clearing and settlement. The audit regulator has kind of weighed in as well in December of 2018, getting ready for the annual reporting cycle, around what do you do from an audit perspective, because the history in Canada was for a period of time, none of the big four were willing to take on the notion of auditing for crypto unless it was clearly immaterial. And if it's actually separately disclosed, one could argue whether or not it's immaterial. And so the auditing regulator weighed in on the notion of what do you do in terms of things like existence and ownership rights? How do you get audit evidence from the issuer side to make sure that you're happy with the revenue they're recognizing in terms of their issuance activity? Volatility in pricing was another thing in terms of what, and also whether or not you have an active market. So it's very similar things, Patrick, that you're weighing in on, or that you're thinking about in terms of your work, although coming at it from the audit perspective. I think from a standard setter's perspective, we continue to resist the notion that we need to play a role in this, but we would rather participate in activities that you have. We will obviously comment on the agenda decision. We're still considering that. And the majority of our activity is still through our I4S discussion group. And we go back to January of 2018, we had a discussion there on what do you do, and we use the word investments. So it's a similar approach, but when you have investments in crypto, we called it decentralized digital currencies. We looked at mining, the recognition of revenue from mining transactions in June of 2018. We also started noting that companies were disclosing that they were issuing crypto for different types of employee benefits, from bonuses to pensions and et cetera. So we had a discussion on that issue in October of last year. And then the notion of the monetization of crypto for goods or services we just discussed in January of this year of our IFRS discussion group. So we continue to try to use our IFRS discussion group to raise awareness of these issues and discuss what we think some of the alternative areas of current IFRS that you would look to for guidance in these areas. So in our view, we would be concerned about exactly the issue I was raising earlier, that if we as the standard setter were to say this is what you should do, it would raise the specter of that, is that consistent with IFRS as issued by the ISB? So we have never issued an interpretation of any form, and we continue not to do that. We just simply try to say, here's the areas of current IFRS that we think you should look to for helpful guidance. The other thing that's really interesting here is in the most recent thing we had in Canada was a cryptocurrency issuer, Quadriga CX. The only person who knew the code to access the vast majority of the crypto that had been issued and they were holding died. And nobody else had the code. And so there are a number of things in the media right now of people who have lost, it says 190 million. There's 115,000 users. The total issuance was 190 million, and there's 70 million in coins that have gone missing because nobody knows the code, including the widow. So if you want some interesting reading, I can give you the link to some of the documents.
Good investment.
Yeah, exactly. Suffice it to say that everybody, the securities regulators, the investment regulators, we as the standard setter are monitoring this. It remains an interesting discussion, but we will continue to work through the IFRI processes and the current IFRS standards to make sure we're trying to be supportive of that.
May I ask one question?
Yeah.
Linda, you mentioned that your Securities and Exchange Regulation is of the opinion that most tokens would be of a financial nature.
Yeah, so and I'm happy to share this with you, Patrick. But basically what they did is they looked through all the disclosures and the underlying documents, and they drew the parallel to things like, well, this is like a prospectus, or we think this is like a security. So they basically looked at the documentation that it has existed around these transactions that they observe in our marketplace and have concluded that so far, and this was dated in June of 2018, so far most of them looked like securities.
I think it's interesting to note that a number of regulations are following a different route, i.e. are trying to define a specific category for tokens.
Yeah, there was an observation, if you read through this, and again, I'm happy to share this with you, that some of them even look more like derivatives than they look like anything else. So there has been a lot of activity on this from the securities regulator perspective.
Alexander.
Just before getting to the accounting, you know, it's probably my mistake here, but to understand actually what you were really talking about when we call tokens and ICOs, because you're talking about ICOs and tokens, then you keep talking the rest of the material about tokens. And I understand that you mean then the same thing. So the ICOs, like we're talking about blockchain and this kind of currency that you can use as a general currency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Currency, we don't like the term currency.
No, okay.
Because the currency is, well, at least the central bank is saying, yeah, and you probably understand that the currency has to have a guaranteed value by a recognized authority.
Yeah, okay. So, yes, it's a poor use of the word currency here.
No, but I
understand what you're talking about. But then you mentioned later that you can record it as an inventory if there are you mean deliver of
if you are delivering products and so on and so forth. But it's if you take general ICOs, you cannot guarantee that inventory is going to be delivered.
No. But that's the interest. Well, you have white papers that say we are going to conduct a project and we're going to deliver to you or to the owner of the token a good in the future.
So it's a pretty specific.
Well,
coin.
You I will, yes.
Maybe I'm not familiar with this kind of
no,
coin.
No, but that.
So currency is a bad word, but it's a coin issued specifically for that kind of product.
Yes, but you know, it's not. That's why the term currency, whatever. By the way, what we call exchange tokens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There is a difference between utility tokens and exchange tokens or payment tokens.
Mm-hmm.
Payments, which are tokens which will be used to pay something. You know that certain...
That's similar to the...
To the Bitcoin.
Yeah, to the currency coin.
Yeah, to the currency coin. But it will be either an internal or some people have been discussing.
That's I'm very familiar with. The other one is
No. You have many platforms, many issuers that are saying, I am going to develop, with the funds I receive, I'm going to develop a service or a software or a system. You will have access to that, and you will receive the services that are delivered by my system.
Like a voucher.
It's like a voucher.
Like a voucher in some sense. Okay.
And the owner, the holder, can either keep it for him because he wants to have access or receive the good, or he can decide to sell it.
Okay. The vision that the people have in Brazil is the same as in Canada, to treat it as security, because I think people are thinking about this first category, not talking about the second.
No, that's why we make a distinction between utility tokens and the other ones.
Okay.
Jim. So the situation in the U.S. is very similar, I would say, to Canada. One of the things we've been trying to do is sort through the discussion and how much is real versus how much is hype as well. Recent articles would say there were 500 people that would accept certain cryptocurrencies, and there were media that went out and actually tested that, and of the 500 that listed that they would accept the coins, they could find less than a handful that actually, when it came to practice, would accept the coin. So we've been trying to sort through, certainly there is real economic activity, but how much is out there in terms of listed companies anyway engaging in the activity? In the U.S., I think we've found so far it's very small. Of public companies who have exposure to ICOs or cryptocurrency. That notwithstanding, there are a handful out there, and then maybe in the private company space more. And so our activity has been more of monitoring. One of the biggest issues is the audit side. The AICPA has got a task force that's working on what audit issues you might want to address, how do you audit existence, risk of loss. So. If a single shareholder holds your password and that person passes away and you no longer have access to your asset, what types of audit risk does that pose? I think accounting firms asking serious questions about client acceptance and the questions they should be asking. And so it's really been focused more on that end. On the accounting side, I think we've been focused on figure out your rights and obligations. Our securities regulator has issued guidances in many cases as well. These can meet the legal definition of a security. I think many, perhaps not all, meet that definition. And so if, in U.S. GAAP anyway, if it meets the definition of a security and you're the holder, the accounting becomes very clear. If it doesn't meet the definition of a security in the U.S., I think it becomes an intangible. My understanding is there's been one restatement to date because of that. So somebody that accounted for it as a security and it didn't meet that definition. If it's intangible in the U.S., the accounting is cost. So one of the questions we have is this prevalent enough of the category that doesn't meet the definition of a security that we as a standard setter need to take action. To date, I think we've said, no, let's sort through the other issues first. One of the other big accounting issues is valuation, and that's really principally, I think, we're thinking of it as an audit issue. So in a market, even if you see the price, if you have no transparency in terms of how that price is developed, who the market participants are, how many of those market participants are insiders, and is that a reliable price? And we read articles saying, you know, the market manipulation in certain so-called currencies could be very significant. So how does one factor that into value? And I think that's a real auditing issue to me of, if I don't understand how the price is determined, can I rely on it? So those are the issues we're addressing in the U.S.
Paul.
Thank you. And thank you to Patrick for the paper, which was very interesting and stimulates quite a lot of thoughts. The situation in the UK is very similar to Canada and the US in that there's not a huge amount of demand for guidance in this area, certainly not in the listed market, where we think that demand might crystallise earlier is under UK GAAP, where I think we have a bit more flexibility to set our own course of action. I thought the accounting issues set out in Patrick's paper were very good. The one bit, as others have challenged already, is the if you're a holder of these tokens, the concept that they're being accounted for under fair value, it strikes me they're really being accounted for at historic cost, because you're not recognising any of the upside, you're only recognising the downside. So I think that's slightly strange. I also do have some concern about how this does comply with IFRS as issued by the as endorsed by the EU. And there was one other thing you said, Patrick, and maybe I'm slightly misunderstood this, but the concept of deferring gains is something more common in France than it is perhaps in the UK. And is that also the case in listed companies? So you were talking about gains on currency, for example.
It follows the EU directive.
Right.
So for individual accounts.
Ah, okay.
We're not talking about
consolidated
financial statements.
Okay. Is there any concern, Paul, by my personal concern about doing work for this, apart from the fact that it's not very big yet and we have other things?
Legitimization.
Yes.
Exactly. That's a
huge concern of mine. It's essentially a very murky business.
Right.
And if you develop a standard for them, they basically say it's okay.
Yeah.
And is that the message we want to give? It's really the big concern for me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
We took a different view. We think that under certain circumstances, it is okay, but it has to be transparent and the commitments have to be clear. Because if the commitments are not clear, then you are in the murky side of the market. But if you have clear commitments, why not? I mean, that's the overall situation. I think, you know, first of all, accounting standard setters, at least from our point of view, should follow transactions are as established by law, by practice as well. So there is a clear movement in France to regulate ICOs and tokens, and therefore we felt that it was our responsibility to say how to account for that when issued.
Yeah. I'm aware of one fairly significant UK law firm who was developing some expertise and were thinking about developing a product line in ICOs, and I think having researched the issue a little bit further, they decided that that was not a market they wanted to be in exactly for the legitimization issue.
Jim?
That's a little bit of my concern as well, particularly when you hear things like you're receiving value, but you can't identify any obligation on the other side. So somebody's just giving you money. There's no equity, there's no liability, and that's the category you have, and you say if you have that, it goes to P&L. Well, if this is just the transfer of inefficient value from one party to the other, there's other asset bubbles that have been built on that as well, and whether or not, the question we have is, do we want to be a footnote to history that says, and this was perpetuated further by accounting standards that gave legitimacy to...
No. Accounting standards, if I may, Jim, accounting standards are here to create transparency. So if people are, quote-unquote, sorry to say that it's that way, stupid enough to subscribe in exchange of nothing, we're in a free market.
Yeah,
and it's not for the accountants to do that. It's for regulators to say you couldn't do that, I think.
Yeah, I could just think of, you know, back to, you know, tulips, and if an accounting standard setter was around at that point in time and said, here is the accounting for, do you have a footnote to history that says halfway through this, accounting standards were developed that, I just don't know the answer to that.
NAMI, who has developed standards herself in this respect.
Thank you. Yes. And first, we commend the ANC for its effort to set accounting regulation that addresses the accounting for ICOs and tokens. And regarding the issuers' accounting for tokens, our experience is that the characteristics of tokens are sometimes difficult to identify based on the commitment made by the issuer, as expressed in the white paper or other relevant document. So we are interested in whether there are any guidance regarding how the issuer should deal with the cases where the characteristics of tokens cannot be determined, or by including additional notes to the financial statements, the issuer could always make the characteristics clear.
It's not for the accounting standards set up to set a regulation for what are the conditions to be met to issue a token. This is taken care of by other regulations, law. And as I explained, there will be different sorts of offerings, offerings with a visa, offerings without a visa. And what we are saying is that for both, in accounting terms, there will be a clear explanation of what the commitment is. So therefore, transparency and clarity on commitments will have to take to be organized.
Yara?
Yes. As part of our research activity, EFRAG is a project on crypto assets from 2018 agenda consultation. And the scope is rather broader than what we just heard from the ANC, as this project is focused on a specific regulation in a jurisdiction. We are now in the problem phase, in the problem definition phase, so meaning that we are running preliminary work to identify what are exactly the accounting issues. And the target is now to issue a discussion paper in the second half of this year.
Thank you. Chris?
So just an update from AOSSG. So you've heard from Korea and Japan. So from a couple of the other countries, Malaysia is actually just in a consultation phase about ICOs, but the proposal at this stage is that for public companies that they shouldn't be allowed to actually issue ICOs. So then the accounting would fall back for the non-private companies slightly differently, I think, to what France was doing. Sri Lanka has also got guidance, or has not actually had any ICOs issued at this stage. And from Hong Kong and Australia's perspective, there's been no real changes in developments in that. It's still not a large market that people are actually looking at. So my specific comment in terms of legitimising, part of the reason when we first brought that cryptocurrency paper to ASAF was to say this is symptomatic of an issue that there is a gap in the literature for intangible assets which are held for investing purposes. And I think if you took that approach, rather than saying you're doing something specifically for cryptocurrencies, you're not actually legitimising cryptocurrencies, but you're saying it's an example of something that's demonstrated there is a gap in the literature. So that's how I would deal with that scenario. In terms of the actual accounting, from the issuer side, very consistent with where France landed, that you look at the components, but do have some concerns about that holder side, that I think that accounting is a bit problematic.
Alexandru?
Just to stress that, do we have the same concern about legitimization regarding you guys, Jewish and Norm, about that? The Securities and Exchange Commission in Brazil does not consider those coins to be assets under their umbrella. So if you trade those assets, you are on your own. They do not offer any protection. Mm-hmm. And part of that is based on research. They did talk to a few people who trade those currencies, and they split on two kinds of users. The first user is a pure speculator. They buy it, but the same form they are buying gold or any other currency or any other commodity that they trade. And the second one was the group that are using those coins for payment. And then for the people that declare that I'm using it for payment, then there are a second question being asked. Why am I using this, the regular system, which has actually lower fees than those coins? And they say, well, I'm not going to use the regular system because then I will have to pay tax and to be disclosed. So we haven't found any legal use of those currencies at the moment. So everybody that is using it was using it to hide money. So for the people that are paying with it, not people. Some people are just trading or buying coffee or gold or Bitcoin. But for the other group, the people that have been honest enough to talk, they gave that there is no legal reason or lawful reason to use it. Just that.
Mm-hmm. Jen?
Okay.
China has just forbidden.
Yes.
That's the right way to go.
Yeah. I already shared the information last year at the SF meeting that the ICO is not allowed in mainland China, so we don't have developed any accounting treatment to a document on this area. However, we also noticed that the cryptocurrency developed very quickly, rapidly in some of the jurisdictions, and it has become one of the topics of the G20. So we think it's very meaningful and helpful to have this discussion, and we do appreciate the efforts made by ANC and also the documents issued by the Japan last year. And we also noticed that Australia did some research in this area, and this topic has also been discussed at the last year EEG meeting. So it's very meaningful. To be specific with regards to the agenda paper, we have some a question. So the first one is, just as Patrick just mentioned, that your document focus on the individual accounts, so how to coordinate the consolidated financial statement under IFRS, the first question. The second one is regard to the accounting treatment for issuer in slide 5, the last point. Some people think that maybe we should think how to coordinate with the IFRS 2, because in this case, maybe the issuer may be involved in the issuance of share-based payment. So that's the second point. The third one is related to slide 6. The second point in slide 6, you mentioned the token held for own use will be amortized over useful life. We think it's very difficult to estimate the useful life, because some crypto assets do not have a fixed maturity date. So,
So it's very, we think it's very difficult to determine the amortization period. The last point is also in slide six. Generally, we agree that the tokens held for investment should be valued at fair value, but it's very difficult to determine the fair value at the balance sheet date because the price changed almost every second. So it's very difficult to find like the closing price of the stock in the share market. So how to determine, or you just allow the entity to choose any price at any particular moment, or just to use it consistently. So that's also a problem in our opinion. Okay, that's all.
And? Oh, sorry, Patrick, you wanted to react? There were a couple of questions. Sorry. No, Patrick, why don't you go ahead?
No, okay. No, it's, on the various points made by Machenu, on the last one, of course, but at the end of the day, since any profit is deferred until realization, it's not a big issue. And anyway, in this case, between cost and fair value, there is no difference in terms of profit in the end. And on the contrary, of course, in cost, as in this case, if you think your token is not is below the what you spent to acquire it, you need to take a loss. So with a prudent approach. As regards the amortization, we agree with you. However, I would like to say something global. I wouldn't like ANC to look like someone encouraging a murky business. This is not really the intention, quite frankly. You have serious economists that believe that tokens are going to develop and could develop other than financial tokens, utility tokens, or exchange tokens. I have read literature about that. There is serious literature on this one. So we cannot just say this is a footnote to history, sorry to say. It's a possible economic trend of substance. If one day one of the very large GAFA, for instance, decides to organize a platform where at the end of the day there will be an internal exchange system, what happens?
What was the GAFA, you said, what was that?
Google, Apple, Facebook, and
which is, we're not saying there's no reason to monitor this. The technology itself has tremendous power, could be used for a lot of things where you can find productive value, including banks in the U.S. potentially looking at using it as a medium for exchange, but the economics may be significantly different. In some cases, using it, pegging the value to, for example, the dollar, and then using it to facilitate transaction flow. Blockchain. That would be.
You're talking about blockchain now.
Blockchain. But they may call those things tokens. You could envision a world in which your frequent flyer miles are tokens.
Exactly.
The technology itself could be used.
How are they?
I don't know. I don't get a. That's a digital asset, and so the fact that you might use it might not be called a cryptocurrency, but the technology itself could be transformed in many ways, where we said first figure out your rights and obligations and the accounting would flow from that.
So I just wanted to mention the fact that in line with this potential evolution, you have two possibilities for a regulation or for an accounting standard setting. It's either to wait for private initiative to create new conditions and to use technologies and create new products, or which was the way followed by the French government, which was to try to give substance to tokens, i.e. to regulate tokens, and therefore the accounting treatment is a consequence of that.
And then EH, and then we have to round up.
Patrick, I wanted to address Patrick's question that he raised about whether this was going to be IFRS compliant or not, and a few people around the table have raised that as well. If we find that the proposed agenda decision is accepted and becomes an agenda decision, then that will drive people down IAS 38 for this investment category that we're talking about. And a lot of what you're proposing there looks, on balance, somewhat consistent with an IAS 38 approach. So it's thinking about it as an intangible asset, IAS 38, not thinking about it as a trading instrument or a speculative instrument. So the IAS 38 would send people. So as they're thinking about staying compliant with IFRS standards, and they're thinking about this French requirement as well, there's lots of steps they'll have to take, and there's a few sticking points. I think one sticking point's active market, and we've had that already. I think another sticking point is this ability to be able to take a provision for a loss. I don't see that in IAS 38. I don't see the profit realization step in IAS 38, because I think the mechanics of what they'll have to do is similar to the mechanics when we do an asset revaluation on a tangible asset. And there's lots of experience in the marketplaces, in some markets, of how you do asset revaluation on tangibles. So you can follow through those steps. And I think as the companies try to do that, there will be some points of difference to this guidance here that the practitioners will have to deal with.
EH?
Yes. James and Linda has been pointing out that this issue has a very limited exposure to listed companies, particularly in U.S. and Canadian market. But what we have been observing in our jurisdiction is that there are some like trading houses, exchange houses, which has huge amount of digital currency. And what's happening is that some listed companies are trying to buy those, trading houses. And I think there will be increasing number of listed companies who are very interested in buying those trading houses. So probably in the future, IFRS has to, should be developed in terms of those valuation of those intangibles.
So I need to correct one thing. I think that in Canada we're seeing more prevalence than is being seen in the U.S. So hence, all of the activity I listed, we're actively monitoring this because we're seeing this pop up on balance sheets of listed entities in a more prevalent way. However, I don't think it's hugely material yet, but it could be. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make sure that people understand that in Canada we're very actively watching this.
Well, we're watching.
one point and for one final point on my side, as regards the owner of the code, we will take care of that, in particular in the context of platforms. If you, as the holder, you give your code or your token to a platform for the platform to control the asset. In this case, there will be an asset in the platform and a liability to the holder, because there will be a liability to the holder, and since the control will not be in the hands of the holder anymore, it will be in the hand of the platform.
Then the original owner would have a receivable?
Yeah.
You'd have to factor in things like death of holder.
Easy surprise to see if it was, isn't it?
Okay, well, thanks, Patrick, for this very interesting discussion, which we will probably rediscuss in the future.